From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Since COVID, we've all become somewhat battle-scarred when it comes to stories about pathogens and infections. And right now, a new bacteriological pathogen is spreading amongst the community, especially amongst those who live unhoused. It's small now, but it does have the ability to grow and become a much larger issue. Today on the show, we check in with Lane County Medical Director Dr. Patrick Ludke and check up on what public health issues are impacting our region, both positively and negatively. Then, in the second half of the show, we'll talk with a reporter at the Oregon Capital Chronicle about two recent meetings she attended with Governor Kotek and Senator Wyden as they addressed nonprofits and business leaders regarding funding cuts and tariffs from the Trump administration and their impact on Oregon. One of the biggest negative impacts to people living unhoused is the fact that disease and pathogens can spread very easily. Right now, a bacteriological infection is spreading among such groups, and as you'll hear from Lane County's medical director, it has the potential to become a very big deal. Dr. Patrick Ludke, Lane County's medical director, always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Michael, wonderful to be here.
Yeah, so we've been seeing some reports about a bacteria called Shigella. Shigella, oh, thank you. What is it?
So it is a bacteria.
Okay.
So in the world of small critters, there's bacteria, viruses, fungi, parasites. So this is a bacteria.
Okay.
And it's almost exclusively found in humans, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And it could cause severe disease.
Okay.
So just like humans, we have a genus and a species, Homo sapiens, right? Mm-hmm. So Homo is the genus, sapiens is the species. Shigella has four species. So we are seeing two of them, Shigella sonii and Shigella flexneri.
Okay. What are the symptoms? What are the, you know, the potential bad things that happens if you contract this bacteria?
Yeah, so it hangs out in your intestines.
Okay.
And therefore you get nausea, vomiting, diarrhea.
Okay.
Now, what's unique about this bacteria, although there are a few others that do it, but norovirus, the cruise ship virus, and others don't do this, it can invade the lining of your intestines. So you can not just get diarrhea, you get bloody diarrhea. Sorry, it's no fun talking about
this.
Sure,
sure.
And you can also get white blood cells and pus and those sort of things. You can get yucky stuff.
Okay.
So, and then anything that can invade and get into the bloodstream then can spread through your whole body.
Mm.
So it can cause severe disease, especially in people who are immunocompromised.
Okay. Give us some context around what you're seeing. How big of a threat is this? Kind of what are you seeing as an epidemiologist, public health expert?
So this is not a surprise because the Portland metro area has had a pretty large outbreak, over 200 cases now for about the last year. And we saw our first case linked to the Portland metro area. There's a lot of commerce on I-5, right? And we thought we're probably going to see a case, so we've been trying to get the community aware. And we saw our first case connected to it in March. And now we have 18 confirmed cases in Lane County. 11 of which were severe enough in their infection to be hospitalized. So this is not a minor annoyance.
Okay.
Like the cruise ship virus where you feel yucky for, you know, a day or two, and then you go back to your normal activities. This can be a real problem.
Okay. How is it spread?
So it's typically food, water, and person to person.
Okay.
And there's nowhere near as many Shigella infections each year as there are norovirus, for example. You know, there's millions in the United States alone of norovirus. We'll see thousands of the Shigella cases. And in Lane County in all of last year, we only had 12 cases in the whole year.
Hmm.
So seeing 18 already in 2025 is a bit eye-opening.
Okay. If I read correctly, some of the victims of this were the homeless in our community. Do the conditions of people who live unhoused, is that more susceptible to a bacteriological infection like Shigella?
Absolutely. And that's really a key insight. So this is really an easy-to-kill bacteria just with soap and water or even hand sanitizer. Unfortunately, if you're houseless, you don't often have access to hand washing and hand sanitizer. So that's one issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other issue is, as I alluded to earlier, the immunocompromised are at a higher risk for severe disease. And some people who are on the streets, you know, living on the streets, maybe you don't have access to your medicines, maybe you're diabetic and you're not accessing your insulin, which can affect your immune system if your blood sugar is too high. So they're at an increased risk too.
Okay. With seeing cases of Shigella, does that portend other problems as well, other bacteriological critters as you describe them? Is the conditions for Shigella, does that also mean chances are we're going to see other types of things?
I think that's a really good thought. You know, I don't want to be a fear-monger here.
Sure.
There are many organisms spread through this route of contaminated food, contaminated water, or personal hygiene that mm-hmm. people can't wash their hands. And that includes E. coli, Salmonella, other organisms that all the listeners have heard about. So yes, there are risks for these others as well. The biggest reason we're really concerned about Shigella in the public health space, so the clinical space is it can cause severe disease, we're concerned for that. In the public health space, Shigella only takes a tiny number of organisms to infect somebody.
Hmm.
So as low as 10 bacteria. Now, to put that in perspective, most everybody's heard of typhoid fever, which is a Salmonella bacteria. You have to ingest maybe 100,000 Salmonella bacteria
wow.
to get typhoid. Shigella, it takes 10. So you have to be really fastidious. You have to be really, really clean to prevent it from spreading to others.
Okay. And that leads me to my next question, which is what should people do? You know, in terms of, you talked about hygiene. And then my assumption is that because it's a bacteriological, antibiotics are the treatment?
So most people would get over this on their own.
Oh, okay.
If somebody has a significant infection, like they're hospitalized or they have HIV, they're immunocompromised, we will treat them with antibiotics. But most people don't need antibiotics,
okay.
which is a good thing. I forgot the second part of your
question. Just what can people do? I mean, better sanitation and whatnot.
So two parts. There's the prevention part.
Mm-hmm.
So washing your hands. If anything has been around diarrhea, like linens, go wash them, you know, at a hot temperature. Typically 120 or above will kill this, which is a standard water temperature anyway.
Okay.
For people who have a water heater. And the second part is if you have Shigella, confirmed Shigella case, there are several things we want you to not do. So don't prepare food for others. And wait at least 2 weeks until after your GI problems have stopped before you go back to work, back to school, back to a food service industry. And the reason being, again, is because it takes so few bacteria to cause infection. We want to make sure that you're not shedding any more of that bacteria.
Okay. And quickly reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking, as we talk often, with Dr. Patrick Ludke, Lane County's medical director. I'm going to switch gears a little bit. I just got, you know, we do a lot of shows about impacts from the federal government cuts. We've read all about, you know, cuts to NIH and other things. I'm just wondering, from a county level, are you seeing any impacts to public health because of health cuts at the federal level?
Oh my, that is quite a question. So we are seeing probably three tiers of impacts. The
okay.
first is relative concern, relative fear.
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to continue serving people who are in need? How are we going to continue assessing the population? The second is looking at the requirements around our grants, because there are changes. You probably are familiar with the Supreme Court decision around Harvard
mm-hmm.
And UNC, University of North Carolina. So that has impacts across all governmental agencies, whether it's local, state, or federal. So we're trying to work with our county council through that. And then finally, the financial impacts. So some grants have been cut. Some laboratories at the CDC have been closed completely. What are we going to do for confirmatory testing for hepatitis, for example? The hepatitis lab was closed at the CDC. So how are we going to make sure, if we find a case of hepatitis, is that case linked to another case of hepatitis? Most labs only do the basic testing.
Okay.
You confirm it's hepatitis A or B or C, but there are genetic changes, and you have to have a special lab that will say, this one is linked to that one, which is linked to this food, which should be recalled. And only special labs do that testing. So we're working through that part too. So clearly there are impacts and maybe some more impacts to come.
Hmm. Doctor, my last question for you is this. We're talking in April, that great transition period between winter and spring. And from a public health perspective, are there changes you start to see now for better or worse as the weather gets warmer?
Oh, my. So this is a great question. I'm smiling as I respond because we absolutely look at sort of month by month.
Okay.
So this is the time of year people tend to go outside more and more, whether they're doing yard work or they're starting to say, I'm going to get on those hiking boots and go do some longer hikes. And it's not as if ticks, for example, are not out there in January. They are. It's just that not as many people are out. So now we're starting tick season. So we start to think about Lyme disease. And mosquitoes will be starting soon enough. It needs to get a little
bit warmer. Oh, yes, they will.
Yes. So then we start to think of West Nile virus. Also, people start to have backyard cookouts and such. So the disease outbreaks related to a pasta salad sitting out in the sun for too long and the bacteria grow and people get a foodborne infection, we start to prepare for that too. So we absolutely look at seasonal things like the items I mentioned.
Okay. And then on the positive side of the ledger, less seasonal flu starting now?
Oh, you're exactly right. So we are watching flu right off into the distance. And we are not seeing any scary stuff on the horizon with, you know, worldwide surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
We're watching respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, right off into the sunset. COVID was very mild this year overall.
Okay.
And it's not as if it's gone, but we're down to about 200 deaths per week in America from COVID, which is sad still. It's still sad that there's a few hundred, but
sure. It's,
you know, significantly lower than it was a year or two ago.
Okay. Dr. Patrick Ludke, the medical director for Lane County, always appreciate you coming in and chatting with us.
I enjoy it as well, Michael. Thank you.
Let's check in now with the Oregon Capitol Chronicle, which has covered several meetings with the Oregon governor and senior U.S. senator and reports about what they're telling a nervous and anxious nonprofit and business community. Alex Baumhart, who is a senior reporter at the Oregon Capitol Chronicle, always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for jumping on and speaking with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. I read your two most recent pieces, and I think our audience will learn a lot from them because you're talking about some of the shocks to the system, if you were, from budget cuts and slashes to agencies from the federal government. Your article where you had business leaders talking with the governor and then Senator Wyden is talking to nonprofits like Meals on Wheels. Give us a general overview of these two articles talking to, you know, local, very important governmental officials here in Oregon responding to, it sounds like, real fear and uncertainty about cuts from the federal government.
Yeah, I think both of them sort of address this fallout from, I think, primarily, you know, when it comes to cuts, especially to nonprofits and services, services that are very heavily relied on by seniors, right? Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Meals on Wheels, the sort of fallout from gutting these agencies that oversee these programs. And on the tariff side, sort of the fallout for small and medium-sized businesses. We see a lot of these bigger companies, tech companies, getting a pass on tariffs from countries like China of, I think it's surpassed 150% at this point. So I think the point of that article was really, what is this doing to the middle economy, which is, of course, in Oregon, the thrust of the economy. It's the small manufacturers, it's the agricultural producers, it's ports, it's, you know, we do an enormous amount of trade in Oregon and globally. So I think both of those articles sort of speak to some of the fallout from decisions being made in D.C., where our local electeds are sort of trying to get people together at the table and tell them what might be coming, and then more importantly, maybe hear from them what they're actually experiencing on the ground.
Yeah, and so kind of two questions from that. The first is, you know, with the folks that you talk to, whether it's the business leaders or nonprofit leaders or people who are deriving services from these nonprofits, talk about their mood. Talk about, we hear a lot about fear and uncertainty. Talk about what you experienced talking with them.
I think a lot of people are sort of like, I would say, you know, at the event with Wyden, talking with seniors and Meals on Wheels representatives, and sort of maybe talking more broadly about some of the threats to social services that seniors rely on, there was sort of a sense of like disbelief. I don't think a lot of people imagined that they'd be wondering if there'll be a disruption to their Social Security check, if they would get their weekly delivery from Meals on Wheels. A lot of the folks that were in the room are veterans, you know, a lot of people who are seniors now who rely on these services are veterans. I think a lot of them feel a deep sense of there was almost like a incredulity, like certainly they won't take these services from veterans, right? Mm. So I think there's sort of a sense of like whiplash and disbelief. I think on the business side, perhaps a little of that too. I think there's a lot of people who have sort of this maybe more fiscally conservative, broadly economic value template that guides them when they go to the ballot box. And they're feeling a little bit betrayed by some of those politicians that might have in the past espoused more market-friendly, fiscally conservative policies and ideas. So I think on both sides of the spectrum, there's a little bit of like, what? Me? This wasn't supposed to happen like this.
Yeah.
And then more broadly, confusion and frustration, especially for the business owners. I think I got a sense that the idea of tariffs and bringing manufacturing back to the U.S., maybe forcing that a little, was not entirely unpalatable. What was the speed at which it was happening and the sort of callousness for the small guys. The idea that, you know, even a major manufacturer in Oregon is not the same as a major manufacturer in another state. And if you need 3 to 5 years to even start to bring some of that back to the United States, these tariffs don't give anybody 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, too, again, with both of the stories that you filed. So obviously, you know, Governor Kotek was in the room with, you know, as one of the stories that you filed, as well as Senator Wyden in another room with the second story that you filed. And I'm wondering, you know, so a governor for Oregon and then the senior senator from Oregon, what were they? I know they were listening, but what were they saying to business leaders, nonprofit leaders, service recipients from nonprofits? What were these elected leaders telling them about both what is happening and perhaps what they're going to try and do about it?
Yeah, I would say on the governor's side, both of them, I think, spent the bulk of these roundtables listening and information gathering so that they could go back to, you know, maybe the state legislature or to the to Congress and say, hey, this is what I'm hearing on the ground. The governor has less power, I think, to do much at this point besides soften the economic blow. I don't know necessarily what she's cooking up. It was sort of vague.
Sure.
We're resilient. We can get through this. Senator Wyden, on the other hand, did mention that next week or I'm going to take that. Senator Wyden did mention that when Congress is back in session, he and the senator from Kentucky, Rand Paul, will introduce some measure that is supposed to give congressional strength to repealing the tariffs or to checking them. Or so, yeah, if it's helpful for me to say more succinctly, Senator Wyden discussed getting back to Congress and already having a plan with the senator from Kentucky, Senator Paul, Rand Paul, to sort of take a congressional swing at these tariffs and try to end them.
Was there also talk with people that you interviewed about, okay, if these federal cuts are for real and going to happen and not going to be somehow reversed or repealed, was there any talk about, okay, well, is it possible that the state can step in to provide funding or help with this? Were there conversations about, okay, if we can't rely on the federal government, we have to find money elsewhere?
Yeah, I didn't get the impression that that was what was being put on the table. I think, you know, I really walked away from the roundtable with the governor thinking, you know, the best you can do is try to appeal to higher powers who can maybe make this less painful for these businesses. But I mean, you're talking about some of these medium Oregon businesses having lost already. I heard from one the other day that's lost $500,000 in profit in the last month. multiply that by who knows the next 2 months, if or 3 months or a year, there's no way the state can come in and do anything about that.
Yeah, yeah. Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking to Alex Baumhart. She is the senior reporter at the Oregon Capital Chronicle. In one of your articles, you also talked to the state economist, and I just kind of wanted to, you know, ask you what our economist is thinking, perhaps projecting with regard to the terrible R word recession, or what might happen. What were kind of the inklings you got from him?
Yeah, nobody wants to say it.
No one wants to think it, but
yeah, I mean, I think he artfully delivered bad news, which okay. is, in essence, you know, the state forecasts and data, especially related to economic growth and jobs. Those are things that he'll be looking at in May and June. Those are things that the state, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into sort of projecting what the next quarter could look like or the next few quarters. They are monitoring the markets. That's sort of the most salient real world day-to-day thing they can look at. But of course, those markets are not the U.S. economy. Those are not jobs. Those are not everything. I think the bigger takeaway that I got was, when you have this level of economic uncertainty and you have this level of chaos, companies can't plan. And if you can't plan, you're not hiring. And if you're not hiring, you're not growing. And if you're not hiring and you're not growing, you stagnate. And what does stagnation lead to? A recession. So is anybody going to say that that's an inevitable, predictable thing in the next few months, in this, you know, this year? No. Nobody has said anything to the effect of it's completely off the table.
Hmm. A sobering thought, a sobering thought.
Right.
Alex Baumhart, she's a senior reporter at the Oregon Capital Chronicle, and I'm going to link to both the articles. I think they were great on our web post. Thanks so much for taking some time out and talking with us.
Thanks so much for talking with me. I love it.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Monday on the show, we'll talk with Representative Val Hoyle. She's been visiting in the district and meeting with seniors and other constituents who are terrified about cuts to vital programs like Social Security. I'm Michael Dunn, and this has been Oregon on the Record from KLCC. Thanks for listening.